Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Today on The Grave Talks, Uncovering the Dead, a conversation with Brian Messinger. Brian Messinger grew up with many fond memories of visiting his grandmother in her haunted house. The family embraced these experiences and accepted them as fact because they would occur so frequently. From full-bodied apparitions to doors opening to unexplained voices. Where Brian's grandmother went, so did the spirits. These shared experiences with Brian are what drove him to investigate the paranormal later in life. This is his story on The Grave Talks.
You know, that it started a long time ago. I was probably about 7-8 years old. My grandmother lived in a house over in Richmond, Illinois. And it was haunted as could be. Mm-hmm. The doors would open and close. You'd smell cigar smoke or pipe smoke. Things would move around the house. You know, cabinet doors would be open in the kitchen right after you walked out and went back in. They would be open. That type of thing. So, I've been around it my whole life. And my grandmother had a very good friend who was a very talented psychic. Just being immersed in that entire thing in my life. And as I got older, I kind of strayed from it a little bit, and I always read books on it and stuff and that type of thing. And in 2009, somewhere around there, my daughter had become ill. And like any parent, you worry immensely. Mm-hmm. And I woke up to my grandmother standing at the end of my bed, who had been passed away for about 15 years at that point. And that really put a spark into me to get into this. And she never said a word to me or anything. She just, smiled, nodded, and kind of evaporated. And that's one of those things that I'll, never forget. Mm-hmm. In 2010, I joined a group out of Wisconsin. And 2014, I formed my own group, U.S. Paranormal Research, and we've been hitting the ground running ever since. So, yeah, I've been in it pretty much my whole life.
Sure. Let's dig back and let's talk about your childhood a little bit more in detail, about growing up around a haunted house, having a grandmother who had a friend who was a very gifted psychic. Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds like your family, embraced is the right word, but accepted that this stuff was going on around you.
Yeah, all day long. It was never one of those things like, when you talk to some people about it, they're like, oh, okay, right, yeah, whatever. They don't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And what I've noticed is, like I said, growing up in that atmosphere, my mom's side of the family was very skeptical of it. It was like, yeah, we don't talk about that. My dad's side, we always embraced it. Mm-hmm. And it was always encouraged. It was always, let's talk about the pyramids. Let's talk about UFOs. Let's talk about, Sasquatch. Let's talk about, you name it. And like you said, with my grandmother living in a haunted house, it was just a very common thing. And she had a knack for finding them. She lived in 3 of them throughout my childhood.
Wow. Tell me, do you have a specific, first memory of having something happen where you were just like, that's odd. And then, you go to mom or dad or grandma and say, what was that? Where it wasn't, once you kind of starts being normal and these things are always going on, but do you have a starting point where there was kind of that light bulb moment for you that you remember?
I do, actually. Like I said, I was about 8 years old, maybe 9 years old. And we were at grandma's house, you know, because we spent most of our summers over there. My dad was a woodworker and had a shop over in that town. So we spent the day with grandma. Mm-hmm. And I remember going into the kitchen, having lunch with her. She walked out. I walked out of the kitchen. I went back to get my drink because I left it in there. And that's when one of those examples that happened, that every cabinet in the kitchen was open. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those, you know, grandma, one of those things, you know, and again, as you know, 8 or 9 years old, that's one of those aha moments, like, well, something is off here and we're the only two in the house. So it was one of those moments that, you know, it definitely sparked it. And I knew that was my first event. And she was just like, oh, that's, I forget what she named the ghost. I can't honestly remember the name, but we'll just call him Richard for
sure.
And she's like, oh, that's just Richard, you know? And I'm like, oh, of course, Richard, you know? And then she explained to me that there was a spirit in the house and kind of, you know, walked me through it a little bit. And that was the same day that we went over to see her friend, Francine, who was the psychic. Mm-hmm. And she kind of laid it out for me, how it kind of works and what her beliefs are, how she thought it worked and who it was and how we got to be there. So, yeah.
And it's so interesting. And I mean, I know it's sometimes it's hard to put yourself back in your mindset of being an 8 year old, but how did you process all of that? You know, when you're being introduced to some of these concepts that, you know, you maybe have never heard before. But as an 8 year old, as a kid, you know, sometimes you're introduced to new concepts and told this is how it is. It's just, okay, that's how it is. There's not a lot of room then to argue it. How did you process that when you were getting that information?
You know, I think my upbringing helped out a lot. My parents never treated me as a child. Mm-hmm. It was always kind of as a miniature adult when I talked to them. You know, and my wife will tell you that I'm still a giant child. I've been a fireman for 30 years, so you figure that out. But it was one of those things that, you know, she talked to me like an adult, you know, you know, explaining, you know, like grandma went to sleep, you know, typical funeral answers and stuff like that. It was always talked to as an adult. You know, I've always been around it and never treated as a child with it. So I guess being raised that way, it was definitely easier to process things.
Sure. Tell me about some more experiences from childhood beyond that initial one with all the cabinet doors being open. What were some of the other standout experiences as you were growing up that, you know, that you look back on and go, that was interesting or that was scary or that was, you know, insert emotion here.
Yeah. You know, and throughout her different homes, we had an instance, you know, where, you know, we spent the night and grandma had the key hook by the back door, always had her car keys on and house keys and everything. And I remember coming down in the morning because we were actually going to head down to Southern Missouri to see my great grandmother at that time. And the keys were gone and the back door was open. Mm-hmm. And she yelled USOB. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, what's going on? And keys were actually hanging in a tree outside for no reason. Mm-hmm. Her reading glasses, you know, I remember her reading glasses would be moved around the house all the time. Mm-hmm. I remember a night where she was sitting there with her, she used to do crocheting and knitting mm-hmm. type thing. And she had these, I don't know if you're familiar with them. Remember the old scissors with the big orange handles that were like a foot long?
Yes.
She had a set of those and she went to reach for them. And she always kept them next to her and they were gone. And again, she's like, give me back my damn scissors. And my grandfather, who was as quiet as a church mouse, a very mild mannered man, over on the other side of the room was like, oh, they're next to me again. You know, so mm-hmm. it was like, how the hell did they get over there? Because she just used them, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And as I got older and started, you know, getting into the, you know, fire service years ago, I had an experience with that as well at a very bad car accident. And two individuals approached me at that car accident and basically pointed out an injured boy to me. Who had, unfortunately, you know, mortal wounds, as it were. Mm-hmm. And to this day, I still don't know who those people are. Nobody else saw them. There were no footprints in the snow with them. You know, it was snowing. It was cold. They weren't dressed for the weather. It was just very strange. Mm-hmm. You know, another experience there. And then it got me, like I said, my grandmother, I had that experience with her. And since I've been into the quote unquote ghost hunting, as since 2010, I've got to tell you, I've had some of those aha moments where, you know, holy crap moments, as it were.
Yeah.
You know, we have a church here in town by me, in the town south of me, that we investigated multiple times. And I was sitting in the, it's almost like where the, I don't know if it's called actually a rectory, but it's where the priest, you know, puts on his robes, sure, and that type of stuff. And I was sitting there, and one of our investigators was sitting across from me, and she says, you know, it's really dark to your right side. Now, you're in a room that's pretty much pitch black as it is, and she's yelling, it's even darker. And as I turned to look, something, a black mass, whatever you want to call it, a shadow person came out of the floor and like looked over me sitting in the chair.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that fight or flight syndrome kicks in.
Yeah.
And I decided it was time to move. So, yeah, that was one of those, that was the aha moment there that, you know, this is the real deal. There's definitely stuff out there that is, I don't want to call it malevolent, but I think intimidating, ominous.
Sure.
So yeah, that was one of those aha moments there. You know, we've seen apparitions as a group, as an individual, I've seen them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all very cool. And to this point now I run towards them.
Sure.
Somebody says shadow person, and I had that direction.
And I want to dig into the investigating part in just a little bit. Sure. I want to keep kind of talking about kind of what brought you to that point, because I'm sure there's still more stories to share there. What was your grandfather's outlook on all of this as these things were happening in his house as well?
He kind of just embraced it as, yeah, it's here, but he never really engaged it.
Mm-hmm.
He was just kind of like, okay, you know, it doesn't bother me, I'm not going to bother it type of mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas grandma and her lifelong friend, Francine, they were always like, yeah, let's go poke it a little bit and talk to it and, you know, see what kind of responses we can get. And they always had fun with it in the home. You know, grandma would talk to him all the time, and she would get knocking responses. And like I said before, the cigar and pipe smells, you know, she only says she saw him one time.
Mm-hmm.
In the home. I wasn't there for that, but she said she saw him one time standing in the stairwell looking down at her. And the funny part is, the rumor is that Richard was murdered in the home.
Mm-hmm.
And they never found the body. You know, I guess the gardener and the missus had an affair, and this is the late 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly they never found his body, but in the basement, it was a fieldstone basement, and it had a little brick patch of about a 3-foot by 3-foot patch in the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we always asked my grandfather, you know, you're going to open it up. And his response was always, I don't need to know.
Yeah.
He can stay right where he's at. You know, if he's in there, he can stay there.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was just very cool. And some of our other homes, we had, experiences with, like I said, lights going on and off, doors again opening and closing. The dog would never go on the third floor of her one house. It was an old Victorian from the mid 1800s. The dog would absolutely have nothing to do with the third floor. You couldn't drag that dog up there without a fight. So obviously the dog knew something.
What was your grandmother's, you know, outlook, or, you know, I don't want to ask, goal, I guess, you know, when she was interacting with these things? Was it more just, this is entertaining and a curiosity? What was she trying to bring them out to communicate? What was, you know, I suppose, you know, when you're having these things happen, it certainly is curious, you know, it drives your curiosity. But did she have any, did she like these things? Did she want them to go away?
No, she embraced them completely. You know, it was just somebody to interact with, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the home, that she always thought it was just cool that she had a friend there.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, her and, you know, her friend Francine were inseparable. They were together 24/7 pretty much.
Yeah.
And they would just embrace it and engage with it and talk to them and elicit responses. And it wasn't so much for research or anything. It was just more of someone to talk to, you know.
Yeah.
Something, I don't want to use the term play toy, but sure, kind of along those lines.
Prior to these houses and prior to you knowing her as grandma, you know, back when she was just mom, and then prior to that when she was just, you know, what was her name?
My grandmother's name was Jeanette.
Okay, back when she was just Jeanette, not mom to anybody, throughout her life. Right. did she have experiences throughout her life? And obviously you got to see, you know, her as grandma and those experiences. But prior to that, did she have haunting experiences throughout her life?
She did. As a young lady, she grew up in Naperville area, in Illinois here. And yeah, she had a couple of experiences. It always seemed to be a part of her life. I think my grandmother might have had some gifts, but never really knew it. But yeah, she definitely had experiences. She saw her grandfather when she was a young lady. He came to her and said that, you know, "I'm okay," is all he told her. And she knew at that moment, she thought it was actually him standing in the house. Then she found out like 20 minutes later that he had passed away at home. So there was no way he could have been there.
Yeah.
One of those events. And that was her first event. I remember her talking about that. And yeah, she had several events as a young lady in Naperville area. And the one, her first one was definitely with her grandfather, who just came to her and said, "Hey, I'm okay." You know, and she thought he was in the house. She's like, "Okay, you're fine. Great." You know, and then she couldn't find him and then found out that he had passed. So
the fact that these, with what you saw in your lifetime with her, that house to house to house, things were happening at every house. Do you think it was your grandma that was haunted, essentially, you know, having something that were things that were attached to her, things that were brought out by her, and not in any sort of, you know, nefarious way, not like grandma's in the basement with a Ouija board or lighting, you know, anything, just the fact that maybe there was something about her that, you know, I call it haunted people, where they just seem to be able to bring these things out more than others. Do you think that that was kind of who your grandmother was?
You know, now that you mention it, there's a very good chance. I guess the way to describe it is I've had a couple of psychics that I know, and one of them's on our team. She's, you know, fantastic. And the other one is a friend of mine who's very good. Every investigation we go to as a team, we always seem to get this little girl's voice that shows up around me. And they both told me that this girl is attached to me because she feels safe with me. I don't know where I picked her up. But I think that you're probably onto something there. I think my grandmother may have brought her friends with her from house to house. There's a very good chance. Yeah, I think that's a thing. I mean, nobody can scientifically prove it, obviously.
Sure.
And if they tell you they can, then we have different issues to talk about.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, I think that there's a good chance of that. She might have brought her friends with her.
Yeah, it's just always interesting when you kind of see that sort of pattern going on. And when, especially when someone's not, you know, necessarily actively inviting these things to happen, but they just happen, you know. And that is something I always, you know, I like to look at and think about. I'm assuming your grandmother is no longer with us?
No, she's been gone for about 30 years now.
Oh, wow. Okay. So in your time, you decide you're interested in this. You've had these experiences throughout your life. What brings you to the point of going, you know what, I think I want to investigate this stuff and not just kind of randomly have things happen to me, you know, throughout my life?
Honestly, the experience I had with my grandmother at the end of my bed really, I think, lit the flame underneath my backside, as it were. And it took me a year or so to find a team because I didn't really know what I was doing at that time. I didn't understand how to, you know, get started or what I needed or what I wanted to do. So I found a team out of Wisconsin, just north of me here in Twin Lakes. He's actually still a very good friend of mine. And we started investigating around 2010. It's when I got really into it. Yeah, I started seeing some cool things, learned some techniques from them, you know, and then you, as anybody, you start to kind of refine your own thing and how you like to do stuff. And 2014, like I said, is when I started my own team. The first year was a little slow, you know, like anything new, but we've hit the ground running. And I think we're about 150 or 160 investigations deep now throughout the Milwaukee, Chicago area.
So tell me, when you got onto a team there in Wisconsin and you're going to start doing, you know, investigating. It's more than, you know, you're at your home and something happens, or at your grandma's house or whatever and something happens. You're now going to go into locations. Tell me about some of the first investigations that you went on that produced something where you went, oh, well, this is interesting.
There's a theater in Kenosha, Wisconsin. It's called the Rhodey Opera House that we investigated. It was one of my first ones. Mm-hmm. And I was actually in the restroom in the basement. And we had just got done setting up all the equipment, the cameras and recorders and all that stuff. And I was in the restroom, and in the mirror, I watched actually the founder and IJ. We watched, for the lack of a better term, a black mist come out of the wall behind us. It's like a marble paneled wall. Mm-hmm. Came out of the wall and went right out of the opening of the restroom. We both just stood there kind of like, did that really just happen? You know, it was kind of that disbelief moment. And come to find out throughout our investigation that night that there was actually a doorway that used to be there in that area behind that marble panel that led into the back room area for where the theater performers, so they could use the restroom between, you know, their takes and shows and stuff. So yeah, there used to be a hallway with a door there. Mm-hmm. So that was the first, within the first 20 minutes, you know, of, after setting up.
Let's talk about that one specifically before we move on to another one. So is this something that forgive me if I missed it, you saw this with your own eyes? Did you see this through a camera, or this was just, you're right there and this is in front of you?
We both stood there dumbfounded and saw it with our own eyes. You know, my thing has always been when I, you know, if one person sees it, it's a personal experience. When two people see it, something mm-hmm. happened. And we both stood there and in disbelief and just with our mouths open for, you know, a couple minutes afterwards, that we just saw this black mist come out of the wall and go across the room, the bathroom, and out the door.
Were you doing anything at the time of asking for any sort of communication? Were you just kind of setting up equipment and just kind of hanging out? What?
Not at all. We just finished up, like I said, setting up equipment.
Yeah.
And him and I both went down to the restroom to, you know, use the restroom.
Use the restroom, yeah.
And literally in the mirror, because the way the restroom is, there's like these giant mirrors above, you know, the urinals and all that. Mm-hmm. We watched it in the mirror right behind us as we're standing at the urinal. And it was just that surreal moment of what was that, you know?
Yeah.
And we both saw it. And that was just a crazy night in that place. You know, we heard footsteps later on, you know, going up and down a staircase in the back with a cold spot that dropped 20, 30 degrees difference. You know, how do you explain that? You know, it's just very cool to hear the footsteps. And then as it's getting closer, you feel the cold spot. And when it goes by you, the cold spot leaves. Yeah, just a crazy place.
And to have an experience like that early on, when you're beginning to, you know, learn to investigate, you're new to that version of this at that point in time, and you have that vivid of an experience, are you feeling fear? Are you feeling, you know, curiosity at that time? Obviously, you have some background in having experiences. What is going through your mind as you see a black mass come out of the wall and just kind of go on its way?
Initially, it was I being stunned, I guess, is the best way to put it. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't call it absolute fear to begin with. Mm-hmm. It was more that did I really just see what I just saw, and you know, that disbelief moment, that aha, holy crap, something just happened. And afterwards, you know, you start thinking about it, you know, the hair stands up on your neck, you're like, oh my god, I just saw this. Oh my, you know, what just how do I explain that?
Yeah. And
you can't, you know, you tell other people this stuff, you know, and I've been doing this a while now, and you tell other people this stuff, and they're like, oh, that didn't happen. Like, I was there. The other guy was there. We know what we saw. We know what we, you know, when you hear things and
yeah,
it was just a surreal moment. It was stunned disbelief to start with. And that was my first investigation really with them. And it was just right out the door. I'm like, is this going to be every time? And of course, as you do this more and more, you realize not every location's haunted.
Yeah.
And not everybody gets possessed and whatever. So yeah.
Let's talk about kind of a principle of what you had mentioned there, because this is an opinion-based question. I'm always curious as to what your thoughts are based on your experiences. But something that I found in doing this show now for 8-9 years and the thousands of episodes that we've done and all the stories that mm-hmm. we've heard, one thing that I kind of, you know, there's obviously so many things up for conjecture of this topic. But sure. One thing that I think I would say is almost a firm belief of mine is that spirits seem to operate with the layout, with the geography of what was there in their time. Not necessarily what the geography or layout is of today. And you saying that this thing went through where a doorway was and operating as if it was still there. What's your opinion on that? Do you think spirits live by that? Do you think that they can see the current geography, or are they still operating strictly on what was there when they were there?
You know, kind of my thoughts on it are that they're... I've had intelligent haunts where I can interact with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also had other hauntings where we've just watched stuff and it has no interaction with you. It just does what it wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know. Again, it's just theories, obviously. Maybe they're stuck in some kind of a time loop, or, you know, they're still kind of in their own, or maybe it's a parallel. You know, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I wish I did.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those things, like you said, I think they're stuck to what they know,
mm-hmm.
and they see it as they know it. So that marble panel wouldn't be there. There'd still be a doorway there for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been curious to know that maybe I'm looking into a window of their timeline. And I always wondered if they're looking into a window of my timeline and seeing me.
Yeah. Because you could almost look at it from the other perspective, too, of like, are you the ghost to them, where there's this person standing here that's wearing very different clothing? And, you know, you could be standing in the middle of a desk or something, you know, something that would be there in their time. And like, what is going on with that? And another thing to think about with that, I would say, is the residual versus the conscious type haunting.
Yes.
When you have the entities that seem to be operating within the geography of their time versus the interactive ones, is it more so, again, just opinion from your experience, is it more so the residual type hauntings that seem to operate on their own geography versus the conscious ones that maybe seem to see and hear what we have going on today?
You know, honestly, in the 10 years I've been actively investigating, I want to say it's almost a 50-50 from what I've gathered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get a lot of residual stuff that just interacts with you like it's not there. It's just, you know, typical like sounds, or, you know, we don't get a lot of video. It's almost like these spirits know where the cameras are.
Mm-hmm.
And they avoid them at all costs.
Yeah.
We get some really great audio. You know, we've had some really good audio where we've actually interacted, you know, and obviously we've had audio that just makes no sense as far as what they're saying or what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say it's probably a 50-50, maybe a 60-40 on the residual side, 60%. But we've had some, you know, great investigations, like I said, with, you know, interacting with audio. It's been fantastic. You know, we've been told shut up, you know, be quiet. We were just at Ohio State Reformatory last month as a group, and I had a spirit there telling me to stop being a prick, for the lack of a better term. So,
wow. Yeah.
So,
when it comes to audio and investigating with audio, there are obviously 50 different ways now to try and get audio, sure, or produce or let them produce their own audio. Everything, you know, obviously from an EVP to your ghost boxes, to an ovalist, to you name it. There's a lot of ways of doing that. When you are speaking of getting audio from ghosts, what are you speaking of?
So when I talk about our audio, we use Tascam recorders, mm-hmm, audio recorders.
Sure.
And just from my experience, they're probably some of the best on the market for the quality that you're getting from them.
Mm-hmm.
They're just fantastic. We don't get, you know, the spirit box, we use it a little bit. You know, we very rarely get, you know, good interaction with it.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I'm concerned, the ovulus is just a novelty toy.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even make sense to me. It throws out so many stupid random words that have nothing to do with what you're doing. We don't even use it anymore.
Sure.
But I think our audio is by far probably one of your best tools, you know, investigating and using your own body senses. You know, you can have all the cool equipment, which is great. You You know, some of it's very expensive, as you know. Mm-hmm. And by far, the audio is the best way to go, and just using your own senses and your own eyesight and just going about it that way. I mean, you can go ghost hunting pretty cheap if you just have a good audio recorder.
Sure. Tell me about some of the most compelling audio that you have captured over the years on your investigations.
My God, we have so much audio. It's fantastic. Like I said, we've been very fortunate with that. And I think, off topic just a little bit, mm-hmm. With our audio, we have a team of some very open-minded people. And I think the more you do this, and the more open-minded you are about it, the more interactive the spirits will be with you. And it depends on who's on the team that night going out to investigate. You find that certain groups together get great responses. And when you have some hardcore skeptics, which, you know, every group has one, you get a whole lot less. And I don't know if it's like a negative entity at, you know, or the, I'm not entity, I'm sorry, negative attitude, mm-hmm. or what it may be that's causing that. But yeah, some of our greatest EVPs, I mean, we've gotten some great Class A EVPs. We've been, like I said, told to shut up, stop being a prick. We were at my aunt's house, and we, clear as day, I have my grandmother, on my mom's side, on audio. She passed away in the home. I have my mom on the audio and my uncle all in one night. Distinct, clear voices. There's no ifs, ands, or buts that it's them. Mm-hmm. You know, other family members have listened to it, and they've all said, "Oh my God, that's your mom. That's like my uncle, or you know, my grandmother." And yeah, we've got some fantastic stuff.
Could you make out their words?
I'm sorry.
Could you make out their words?
Oh yeah, their Class A's all day long.
What were you hearing them say when they were all together?
My grandmother always believed that, you know, as she got a little older, she developed some dementia, mm-hmm. In her 90s. And she always said that this is my house when she lived with my aunt. And clear as day, I have a piece of audio with her, and it says, "This is still my house." And it sounds just like her.
Yeah.
My mother, who passed away, always liked to do the Mrs. Doubtfire hello. Mm-hmm. If you're familiar with that, you know, the hello. And we caught that on audio, and it's loud and clear. Mm-hmm. And my uncle, we got him on there. He had a very distinct smoker's cough. And you could hear that. And he hurt himself. He was doing some woodworking. He hurt himself pretty badly with the table or a miter box. And you could hear him yell in pain. So I'm guessing it might be an imprint of that, you know, that mm-hmm. particular moment. But it was definitely him.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it was very cool. You know, we've had children's voices. There's a local museum here in town. It used to be a schoolhouse. Mm-hmm. A little girl crying. Says, "Daddy, don't go," which I'm guessing may have been a little girl dropped off at school. Traumatic moment, you know, sure. First day. We've been in homes. There's a place in town that we investigated, and we got a little child's voice down here. It says, "Help me, I'm down here." Now, the backstory on this house is that in the early 20s, there was a priest who wasn't so nice to children. Mm-hmm. And it was known that you didn't go to his house if you were, especially a young male.
Sure.
But again, it's all speculation, conjecture, and rumor, but never proven. And supposedly the gentleman across the street was in on it with them, and that's the house we investigated. And we have a young male's voice say, "Help me, I'm down here," coming out of the basement.
Wow.
Which is a little bit disturbing.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of those when you hear it, you're like, "Oh, good Lord," you know? Mm-hmm. So, we have a train whistle up in Whitewater, Wisconsin at a location in the basement. They heard it with their own ears, clear as day. And upstairs team, there were no trains that went by. There's no railroad tracks next to it anymore. And it was it sounded like the old steaming or the old steam type trains. And they heard it clear as day in the basement.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Brian Messinger. We're going to ask, can the sound and sight of an old train still run on an abandoned rail line? What was the negative energy that was lurking in the church rectory that Brian investigated? What was it like investigating the house of a priest who allegedly abused children? And can a building that's been stained with the negative energy of the living ever truly be cleansed? Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.